You're listening to the Tech Gaming Podcast, episode 10-8. I'm your host, Robert Desert Eagle Allen. With me today is the other half of Team Cynicism, Sean Nola Kirkland.
Never hurts to help.
And along with us are occasional rivals from Team Optimism. Starting with Sage, let's open an office in Venice, even though we don't have a business plan. Samurage Morse Green.
I still say that it would be a great idea for Tech Gaming to have this awesome office on the beach. So listeners, if you want us to have that, send us some money and then kickstart us, and then we will have an office that you can come visit on Venice Beach.
Then what are you going to do in said office, Sage?
We're going to review games and invite developers to come like hang out and set up demos in the back room that we can then have people play, and people could come visit us and test demos. It would be sweet.
Okay. The other half, Team Optimism. Her partner, the goofy hugging Eric Blue Swim.
You know, if we're going to put the Tech Gaming offices on a beach, can it be a nude beach? Because then we'll all be fighting over the corner office with binoculars.
Have you ever seen a nude beach before? Yeah, I know. They're the exact opposite of a place you'd want to be.
Yeah.
It's not like TV.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of
Euro
old
trip is
people.
Just exaggerating.
Nope.
So, how do I make a transition from boobs around ankles into who's missing tonight? So missing in action is the lawman who's out administering justice to Fantasyland's outlaws, which is code talk for Jeremy is at Disneyland this week. And
yeah, it's funny. My girlfriend, when I woke up this morning, was like, we should play hooky today and go to Disneyland. And I was like, that sounds cool because that's where Jeremy is. But I took all of last week off, so I can't do that.
What is with Disneyland lately? Because when I was in L.A., both of you guys kept being like, hey, Sage, you've been to Disneyland? Want to go to Disneyland?
Well, I have an annual pass, so I can just pick up and go whenever I want.
Wow.
That's true.
I don't recall even mentioning that. But one thing I do have to mention is just what your appetite for things to come. The team did hang out with Adam Tidegear-Malecki, who did commit to a future episode. So Karnov gets to continue.
Yep.
So let me forget about that.
$3.5 million to get him.
Yeah. So let's start things off and talk about what we've been playing during our post-E3 reprieve. Let me start with Sean.
Well, first, I guess the most relevant thing I've been playing is Metal Gear Solid HD Collection for the Vita.
Awesome.
That is subsistence and substance.
Which is a mouthful.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of content.
Cartridge or download?
I did end up getting the cartridge.
Okay.
It was kind of a long... Basically, I saw myself getting that and a bunch of PS1 games before E3 started. So I went down to... There's this like mom-and-pop video game store by me. And I don't want to say their name because I'm about to badmouth them. But I was like, hey, can I get a Vita memory card? And they're like, oh, we don't have any in stock, but we'll order one for you. And I was like, that's fine. You know, there's literally a GameStop right across the street. I was like, you know what? I'm going to E3. I'm not gonna have time to play anything anyway. Go ahead and order it for me. They'll say, okay, it'll be here in 2 days. Do you want to put money down on it? I said, sure. I'll put $20 down on it. And they were like, all right, your total's gonna be $60. I'm like, what? And they're like, yeah, my memory cards are expensive. And I'm like, pretty sure this 8 gig memory card's only supposed to be like $30. And she's like, well, you can talk to my manager when you come back. And blah blah blah. I'm sure you're right. Blah blah. Whatever. Come back the next or when that was supposed to be here. Wasn't there. Came back a week later. Wasn't there. Finally went in last night and they were like, yeah, we see this order for an import Vita memory card and we canceled it because it's dumb and we didn't think anybody would actually buy that. But we do have this 8 gig card if you want to buy it and we'll just credit what you've already had. I was like, all right, fine.
What?
Wow.
So they saw the order for what you had ordered and decided that no one actually ordered it and they were going to cancel it?
Well, not only that, they got him an import memory card.
Yeah, basically, so the person took my money for the card that I actually wanted, then put it in an order for an import card, which is why she thought it would be $60.
Which is probably a holdover from before the Vita was released here.
Correct. And so then the manager saw it and was like, nobody wants this. I'll just go ahead and order a U.S. memory card. And when he comes in looking for his import one, I'll just tell him it's the same thing. He'll be happy that he got $30 off, which I was happy. And then I got Metal Gear. That was the long story.
Why would a mom and pop shop be across the street from GameStop?
I don't know. And it's one of those things that they keep frustrating me. And it's one of those things that I'm like, I really want to support these guys, but they are super dumb.
So it's just that they're so stupid. I mean, are they not gamers and they're trying to run
games? No, they are. Like, one of the guys last night, not the manager, but the other guy was, you know, he's decided that he's going to have the complete Vita collection from the start. So he plays everything that comes out. Like, that's his thing. And that's basically where all of his money goes. But, I mean, they're gamers. It's just that some of them are dumb.
Do they do the thing that GameStop does, which is that they employ girls who have nice racks and no brains and then don't actually know anything about games?
They have two girls that work for them. But anyway,
is that GameStop or is that E3?
That's both.
Yeah, that was my experience at E3. Anyway.
Although, I have to say there were less booth babes this year than last year, I thought, and that made me happy.
They're definitely.
Couldn't tell from the photos on techgaming.com, though.
Well, that's someone obviously chose particular photos, but I even had a friend who did not believe me, and he checked like E3 footage, you know, online, not just ours, but like a bunch of E3 footage, and he was like, "Okay, you're right. To your credit, there were less booth babes than last year, which is great because that means the industry's getting a little more serious again." Or
no, they weren't. There were booth bimbos, people who couldn't answer the simplest question this year.
That made me so angry.
When I left, male and female bimbos.
Yes,
that's true. I think Konami was the worst.
Warner Brothers, the worst. Okay.
I
go by twice to check out Codemasters, you know, Dirt Showdown. I ask them a couple simple questions, including the release date, because I don't want to get called out, you know, for giving the wrong release date on our list. And so I ask them a simple question: when's this coming out for console? Don't know. 5, 6, 7, 8 people could not give me a straight answer.
Wow. Is that because, but do you think that that's because they don't, I mean, I feel like they at least
Codemasters is only publishing the title. Or, I'm sorry, Warner Brothers is only publishing the title, so they don't care. Mm-hmm. Warner Brothers doesn't have a vested interest in a title they're pushing? Like, come on.
But maybe there's not a release date yet. Is that possible?
No, it came out this week. It could be out today. The thing was, it got pushed back for PC. It already came out. But, you know, give me a simple answer. You know, something like that. Try to ask questions about the game because, you know, I've covered most every Codemasters driving game in the past. I was going to do a preview. But I could get zero information out of them. So it was almost like they were completely indifferent, Sean. Like the time we saw that really awful Hudson game, and the PR rep was totally indifferent and basically said that it sucked. And questioned why we were wasting our time with that.
I don't remember which game that was, though, but I do vaguely remember that.
It was a mini game collection. There were, like, sports games and stuff like that, and the guy was just so indifferent, and he let us play. No,
that wasn't Hudson. Oh, it was Hudson, because they're at the Konami booth. That's right.
And on the other side, he was also repping, what was that game? It was a DS game. It was, like, some kind of action.
Yeah, it was Deca Sports 2 was the mini game collection.
Yes, very good.
That, and there was another Karaoke Revolution game that he was also repping, and it was one of those things where he was singing when nobody else was around because nobody wanted to play his Karaoke Revolution game.
Yep. Okay, so.
But anyway, so Metal Gear Solid. Yeah.
Can I, for the record, just reiterate, because I saw we got a lot of comments on that. Like, yes, there really were less booth babes. I don't know why the only pictures we have up are of chicks for the games, but no, there really were less fucking booth babes.
Yeah. But anyway, Metal Gear Solid. It's good. You know, if you played, it's 4 Metal Gear games, so you can't go wrong with that. But there were a couple technical issues, and some of them are just holdovers from Metal Gear Solid 2 that haven't aged well and they didn't fix, and some of them are actual problems with the new game. But, you know, things like I'm trying to at least get through the tanker without setting off alert mode.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot that Metal Gear games, well, Metal Gear Solid 4, I think they fix this, but they generally don't have a good way to restart from your last load point.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you set the alarm, you have to wait for them to kill you, which takes forever. Then you have to click exit. Then it restarts the game, so you have to sit through 4 splash screens: the Konami splash screen, the Kojima splash screen, the Blue Point splash screen, and the Armature splash screen. Then select load game, then load your game, and then select yes, and then wait for it to load. Oh. So it's a good, you know, upwards of a minute and a half between when you die and when you restart if you're trying to be stealthy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's still frustrating. Go figure. And then the other thing is that there are certain times, it's usually when you die, so it's not a big deal, but the frame rate will drop to, like, really sluggishly slow. The one example that I keep running across is whenever you set off C4 and get blown up, the game over screen will kind of grind to a halt.
Impressive.
Seriously?
Yeah, I mean, during gameplay, it hasn't been an issue yet, but it's like one of those things that any sort of spectacular death, it just can't load that game over screen fast enough. It's like,
I do remember I believe it was the PS2 version was a little bit better than the Xbox version as far as slow down the frame rate.
Like I never played the PS2 version. I only played the Xbox version.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I heard it was designed around the PS2's capabilities as far as, I don't know, like certain things like transparency and technical stuff. So.
Yeah, and it is weird like playing it because I remember when they debuted the PS2, that was the showpiece title. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of things in there that are like, look at this cool effect that the PS2 can do. And it's weird seeing that, you know, 12 years later and you're like, look at this cool thing that we could do 12 years ago that isn't interesting. You know, it's like, look at the shadow. Look at the difference between the model sizes of the PS1 Vulcan Raven and PS2's Metal Gear, what's his name, Snake. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like little things like that impressed you 12 years ago. And now you're just like, why are you taking my control away to show me this thing? Because it's not impressive. Mm. But I don't know. I'm complaining a lot because it's what I do, but they're still great games. Right. They do take some getting used to because we have figured out how to control things better than we did back then. But I don't know. I like it. I'm super frustrated right now because, like I said, I'm trying to at least get through the tanker without getting seen, and I've been playing it for about 3 hours, and I'm maybe an hour in, and that sucks.
I want to play three again because I don't think I enjoyed it as much as I should. I think jumping into the menu screens and changing your camouflage should be something I dig, and checking out your stats and, you know, everything related to that. But for some reason, it seemed like it kind of took me out of the game.
I enjoyed three much more the second time I played it.
Okay.
So I would say, yeah, it's worth playing again. Mm-hmm. And it's got Metal Gear 1 and 2, which they keep saying is the MSX version. But then, I mean, you look at them side by side. Those are not the MSX games. Those are probably based on the MSX games. But they are definitely some newfangled form of Metal Gear.
Mm. Bastardized Metal Gear.
No, I mean, I've heard they're good. They're very competent. So okay. I'm looking forward to playing through those.
Cool.
Yeah, and then I've also been playing a lot of Sonic CD, which I don't know why. I don't know why, but I've been playing a lot of it, and I've been trying to get the Savior of the World achievement, which is, you know, go back in time, destroy all of the animal cruelty, whatever dudes, and the holograms.
Right.
And you can't do it with the time stones. You actually have to avoid getting all the time stones because the way it logs the trophy is it actually figures out, did you go and kill this? Did you go and kill that? And if you get the time stones, it does that for you. And so you won't get the trophy, but, that takes a long time. I was surprised how long it's been taking.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, that and the, there's like bronze trophy for beating Metal Sonic without getting hurt. And that took me an hour and a half to do. That is not an easy trophy because I hit spikes like every single time.
Wow, that's dedication.
Yeah.
Do you feel accomplished when it takes you that long to get a particular trophy?
Not when it's a bronze. It should have been silver at least.
That's my problem with like achievement hunting and trophy hunting is that a lot of times I feel like the amount of time it takes to get one of them, especially the ones that are like, it's not even a particular skill that you need. It's just literally you have to do it enough times until you finally get it. I just don't go for them because I don't feel any sense of accomplishment afterwards.
That one is skill. It's just, you know,
I know.
There's so many factors to screw up in there, and it's only a, you know, 15 second race if you do it all right. But it's just doing it all right and not fucking it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's been pretty much all I've been playing that's worth talking about. Played a little bit of Final Fantasy VIII because I don't know why.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you playing that on the Vita?
Fuck you.
Jesus.
Wow. That was a low blow. Came out of nowhere, Blue.
No, right? I did download it in anticipation of that, though. I was like, all right, I want to make sure I have at least one bubble so that if it needs bubbles, I can put it on the Vita. Why not Final Fantasy VIII?
Oh, don't get me started.
Yeah. But Deagle, what have you been playing?
Well, Let me start off by talking about what I think is one of the most fantastic and maybe some would say ludicrous explanations for the number of languages in the world, which can be found in the story of the Tower of Babel, where the nations unified in an effort to build a structure that could reach the heavens. So the result of these efforts, they turned out to be resulted in an angry god and made people speak different languages. And eventually we got to the translation of an iPhone game into the Xbox 360 and PS3 platform. So what I'm talking about is Babel Rising. So the Tower of Babel, I think, is pretty much a good plot line for a video game. You have an endless procession of fodder who hope to add to this tower, you know, in order to reach the heavens, and you're a god trying to thwart their progress. And it almost sounds like a tower defense game, right? But but if I explain the mechanics of the tower defense genre in maybe another language and the basic elements were there, you could bet something was lost in translation. And I think that that's a pretty good idea of what's in store for you. So we all know God is omnipotent, but like any World of Warcraft character, he's at the subject of cooldown timers, which isn't really that fun. So each of the game stages, you pick two of four elements, and these choices correspond to the two face buttons on the controller. So, for example, if you pick Earth, you can send a rock on, you know, some unsuspecting builder's head with the A button, or you can create this rift that kind of, you know, erupts from the ground with the B button and kills a string of people. Now, here's where the fun comes in, because at times the game feels like beachhead transposed to the Old Testament. So the levels, they try to mask the simplicity by offering different objectives. Sometimes you have to hold out for like 9 or 10 minutes. Other times you have to kill hundreds of innocents. And it should be shorter. And that's one of the problems. The other one is that God doesn't have a tech tree, which, once you gain, you know, the elemental powers, there's really no improvement or tweaking, you know, his arsenal. That said, I think the game is fun in short doses, really short, and amazingly the Kinect, it's actually somewhat responsive, but you'll probably want to stick with the controller if you're score chasing, because it's just, you know, that much quicker. The PS3 version has move support. I did not play that, but I have a feeling that might work a little bit better if it's implemented correctly, because you can kind of move around, around the screen, almost like a, you know, mouse controller with a little bit more speed. So that may be the version to get, but a little simple, not a lot of depth, and that's Babel Rising. So any questions on that?
No.
The other thing, none at all.
It was a concise summation. I feel like I totally understand what's up.
Okay. Well, I'll leave.
Hey, I got a question.
Yeah.
Robert, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling well.
Yeah?
Yes. Why, Sean? Mm-hmm. Bring it to me. What's going on?
I just want to make sure you're feeling okay. I don't know. You wanted questions so bad, that's all I could come up with.
Oh, no.
Okay. I got a question.
Okay.
Is it Bab? Huh? Or Babel?
It's Babel.
Babel, like the Tower of Babel? At least I think that's the pronunciation.
Which is interesting, because the movie that I was recently in was called The Babel Project.
Yeah, did you babble a lot?
No, actually, I was muted almost the entire time.
if only.
Ah, ha, ha, you're so funny, jackass.
So I was supposed to play a few other games, but for one reason or another, I did not. Gungnir, let me kind of chastise Sony a little bit. Atlas Son of our Code, I'm a big fan, probably not as big as Tidegear, but still a big fan of the Department Heaven games. And that was this week's PSP offering from then. They anticipated that it would be compatible with Vita, but in fact, it is not. There's no way to transfer to either download from the Vita or, you know, transfer it to from your PS3 onto your Vita, which really kind of sucks. And I've been in this situation a couple of times now, you know, a day one offering PSP, and it's not, you know, you can't get it on your Vita. And I think that is complete and utter bullshit. And
so
hold the release until, it works on your new system. I'm so pissed for that. I don't even have words.
So who makes the final, I mean, this might be sort of a stupid question actually, but I don't know, who makes the final call on whether or not they're going to make, I mean, is it the developer or is it Sony that decides, like, we're going to make this game compatible?
They both have a say in it. So basically, if the developer doesn't want it to be on Vita, they can say so. But Sony, from what I've heard, Sony's got a backlog of these games that they're trying to make sure don't have any sort of workarounds.
Atlas was, from the moment it was announced, they were trying to push this for Vita. So I know.
Yeah.
And they're smart. You know, they know that there are some Vita owners out there, Sean and I, that would, you know, have a chance of picking that up. And so they were pushing for it. So it's really kind of in Sony's power. The only word, you know, I talked to them today of when this will happen, because I do want to review it. They said they're hoping for the very immediate future. But I still think that that's kind of bullshit.
Which means nothing. Yeah, that doesn't mean anything at all.
Yeah, so I don't know. You know, when they announced the Vita, I just thought PSP compatibility meant that everything that was online would play on your Vita. And I'm really kind of jaded by this experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not that impressed. I know this is a question that comes up later, but I'm not that impressed.
It almost reminds me of Microsoft. Do you guys remember when the 360 came out? And Microsoft put out that blanket statement that we intend to make every title backwards compatible. And they issued about 5 updates, and then they just, you know, totally forgot about that. And I guess everybody did. And it was just like, yeah, your intention and the execution were two very different things.
Yep.
Yeah, so half my Xbox collection isn't backwards compatible.
Right. I think they ended up, getting about a third, which is good, which is impressive, but I don't know. I kind of went into the new system thinking that eventually, you know, most everything with a you know, sporadic exception would make it.
I feel like that wouldn't have been such a problem if the Xbox wasn't so, if the original Xbox wasn't, well, both of them weren't so glitchy. Like, you know, if it was reasonable that your old Xbox might still be working, and therefore if you really wanted to play an old game and it wasn't playable on the 360, you could pull out your old one and play it on there. But like most Xbox and Xbox 360 units get the red ring of death pretty quickly on.
And do you know the amount of space between an original Xbox and a 360? You know, that's a huge amount of space.
A lot. Yeah.
That's like a chest of drawers, the amount of space. Well, okay,
actually,
but enough.
I fixed my original Xbox this week.
Did you?
Yeah, and it's stupid. I have the second generation DVD drive, so I figured when it started giving me disc read errors after a couple of minutes, I figured it was just dead.
Right. Is it the Thompson DVD drive?
Wait, I think the Philips was the good one, wasn't it?
We're probably off into way left field here.
But yeah, basically, as stupid as the solution was, all I had to do was get like one of those CD lens cleaners.
Oh, okay.
I think the biggest disappointment with Xbox was that they promised that it would be a moddable machine, and then they never went that direction or released mod kits.
You got faceplates.
Yeah, whoopee fucking do.
Wait, you don't have faceplates anymore on the new system?
Oh, yeah, that's true, with the new one.
You have faceplates. No, you don't.
You don't have shit.
I have the Death Smiles one.
So do I. Nothing to put it on. So
anyway,
I'm too grumpy. let me hand it over to Sage.
They suck so much.
Give me some options.
I have not been playing anything. I have many things about E3, but since I got back, I have been choreographing stage fights and getting my photography show in order. And I was a little burned out on games. So next week I start my gaming and reviewing and logging and stuff. But this week I've got nothing.
Okay. So burned out after E3?
Mostly it was that I had other stuff to do, and because I had spent so much time playing games at E3, I figured I'd focus on writing reviews for those and taking care of business, as it were.
We'll touch on that E3 in a second. So let me hand it off to Blue.
I'm going to do a public service announcement.
Okay.
Now, I'm typically the retro guy. Right. So I play older Super Nintendo stuff all the time. It's my bag, baby. And I've actually decided to experiment with import Super Nintendo gaming. And I know a lot of people, when they think imports, they're probably thinking about having to buy a console or solder in some crappy chip or just say fucking go grab a ROM or an emulator or something like that. But the thing is, with the Super Nintendo, turning that thing, turning a North American Super Nintendo into a Super Famicom is a matter of taking a pair of pliers or wire cutters to two plastic tabs along the back of the cartridge slot.
Mm.
The Super Nintendo uses physical region locking. So basically, once you clip those two tabs along the back of the cartridge slot out, you're good to go. And I actually imported Shoujo Senshi Sailor Moon. I finally got one. And, and this is the first Super Nintendo game, and it is a Final Fight, Golden Axe, Streets of Rage side-scrolling brawler, and it's actually not that bad, all things considered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have it takes place during the first season, so you'll see some references to certain episodes here and there, like this one takes place at an amusement park. And there is a panda riding a train around the stage. So every now and then, hear like this little like train horn.
Right.
And out will pop this panda, you know, driving the train. It'll knock over the enemies or you if you're standing in its way. And throughout the game, there are, you know, several different enemy variations. Mostly palette swaps, but some of them do reference villains from various episodes.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the villain, as the boss characters go, when you get towards the end of the game, you have, you know, some of the bigger villains. I think it was Malachite, and spoilers for the first season, you have to fight the human form of Tuxedo Mask or the regular super whatever. So, yeah, spoilers for a 20-something-year-old anime. Then after you beat him, and the hitboxes for like some of the human villains and I guess the bosses in general, they're very, very particular. You have to really line things up, and if they're like launching a flurry of, you know, punches and kicks and sword swipes and stuff like that, if you try to punch them, you'll get hurt, even if like they're like paused for a moment when you think you have a window of opportunity.
Right.
If you like go to punch them, you'll still get hurt, and bosses do a hell of a lot of damage.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it does get to be kind of a pain after a while. But
while we're still on the subject of one-handed gaming, can we talk about real quick?
Gross.
Can we talk about real quick the fact that we saw a game at E3 that was so moe that the description of the things that got cut were even making Deagle squeamish?
Which one?
Why am I being used as a point of reference here?
Because just looking at the art style makes me squeamish, so that doesn't mean anything.
Which game?
Was it Hatsune Miku? So,
I don't know if we want to save the game because we'll probably end up reviewing it, and I don't want them to get all upset that we said that it was.
We're giving them great publicity.
Too moe for Deagle.
That's a stamp of disapproval, all right. Too moe for Deagle.
Right.
That's pretty bad.
It just kind of opened with your character with a panty shot. I really enjoyed that.
What was the part? It was the. No, in the low camera to make sure that it stays there. But,
always have to see panty shot.
Yeah, they make you watch.
Which is like the Atlas booth, by the way.
The part that they cut out though is the part that made you squeamish. Where you heal your characters, you actually had to scrub them
at the bathhouse. Like,
yeah.
Which to be fair, I think is only squeamish making, and we talked about this a little, because they look like they're 7, not because they're like bodacious babes.
Right.
Creepy.
Like, it would be much more erotic and therefore maybe appealing to people if it was something that, you know, was like, oh yeah, this is alluring to me and I actually am turned on by this. But when they look like children, then it's kind of like, I don't want to touch children that way.
But anyway, so sorry, I see here on the outline there's another Sailor Moon game, and I can't wait.
Although, Blue, I have a question real quick. Would you say, given all the references to the series, is this... Because I've noticed that games made off of, like, especially anime, sometimes it doesn't matter and it's still totally approachable to someone not familiar with the anime series. But then sometimes if you're not familiar with it, it kind of, like, loses an element of appeal, especially when there's a lot of referential points. So would you say that this game is something that non... like people who are non-super into the anime could get into, or no, you have to be like a real fan to want to play this game?
I think it leaves enough to the imagination. Doesn't exactly, it doesn't spell out all of the events as to why you're fighting Darien or whatever his Japanese name is. I think after you're playing the game, if you aren't like a hardcore fan, you can go back to the series and you'll actually want to go back to the series and watch it and find out, okay, why am I fighting this guy? Why am I fighting her and him and stuff like that? I think it's a pretty approachable game.
I will say that when I went through my teenage emulate everything years, I played it, and it is perfectly approachable. It's a beat-em-up, but I also had zero interest in watching the show afterwards. I did not care why I was punching people in the face.
Okay. Cool.
And, as for the second one, and I will say that I'm leaving one off for next time, and that's the fighting game.
Oh, I also played that one.
Huh?
I also played that one.
That's pretty good. And I'm going to save it. I'll save it for next time. I'll just quickly mention the puzzle game. The puzzle game, first of all, it has some of the greatest main menu music, and I linked to it in the outline. Did any of you listen to it?
Not yet.
I described it in the outline as the Sailor Moon equivalent of Dig Diggity Dog from WWF No Mercy, the menu music that would play throughout the, you know, well, throughout the menus and stuff like that.
Oh, because we're familiar with that one.
Actually, I am.
I mean, if you played like N64 wrestling games, it's like Dig Diggity Dog was like pre-programmed into your head after playing No Mercy.
I'm glad you mentioned music, though, because now I don't have to go looking for music to put into the show. I can just use those.
That'd be perfect. I mean, yeah, definitely. But as for the puzzle game, it's kind of like I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it. It's kind of like Tetris Attack, but it's also one of those games where you click on like two or more blocks and they'll disappear, and then the blocks on top of it will fall down, and then you'll try to group as big of a chunk of the board together so you can knock it out of the board and then send the like garbage blocks, whatever, over to your opponent. Mm-hmm. I'm still. I haven't quite mastered yet. You have like some special powers that will do various random things, like change some pieces around and drop extra garbage on your opponent and whatnot. I mean, I've seen it on eBay for about like $5 or something like that. And it's pretty good. I mean, the menu music alone is worth a pickup.
There you go. Okay.
And that's pretty much it for now. Part two of Famicom Imports will be next time.
All right, so we're going to take a little musical interlude break right here.
Breaking. Dig, diggity, dig, diggity, dog. Shark.
We're back.
So, guys, let's do a little post E3 wrap up. First thing I want to talk about, we mentioned briefly, were the pressers. Let's talk about what the big three, Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo, did right, and what was that area of improvement for them?
Okay. Wait, I promised you I'd be on Team Cynical today, and then I said I'd be on Team Optimist, but I want to read these to get me back on Team Cynical. These are three headlines that are in yes. Twitter, one right after another, okay?
Okay.
First one, rumor, WWE leaving THQ.
Uh-oh. Oh, shit.
Two, Cartoon Network confirms cancellation of Thundercats. Three, little Darth Vader from the VW commercials undergoing open-heart surgery.
Oh, Oh, Jesus. Oh.
So now I'm in a bad mood. So.
Oh, no.
All right. Welcome back to the dark side.
May the force be with you, little dog.
Okay, moving right along before you guys get all naysay.
Yes.
I, in general, was really underwhelmed and underimpressed by all of the pressers in general. Mm-hmm. But I did think that of all of them, Sony, I mean, they all felt really lackluster to me, all of them. Ubisoft, well, I didn't go to Microsoft, but Ubisoft, Nintendo, and Sony all felt really lackluster. But I felt like Sony tried, and part of that is because Tony, what's his face, really knows how to like put on a show. Like, he's a really charismatic speaker.
Jack Trenton.
Jack Trenton, that's the one.
Tony. Where was Tony, the Italian guy?
I just can't do names, man. The T Trenton, whatever.
Jack Trenton is so Italian that he named himself after a city in New Jersey. So he can be
well, there you go. Hence Tony. So anyway, no, but I really, I thought it was interesting that rather than having like a post crazy party like they did last year, that they basically bought the crowd by giving everyone a free year subscription to PSN.
Here's my thing about that.
It was smart of them to do. Like, it made sense.
But here's my thing. Mm. A couple years ago, Microsoft did the, and everyone here gets a free 360. And everybody, like, the whole enthusiast, whatever, pitched a tantrum about it. And then you saw all these articles from the press saying, here's what we're doing with our 360 since we can't keep it because we have integrity, blah, 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 set and the other. So then Sony does it, and nobody complains about it because on the surface, it's like, well, they're giving them $50 worth of a subscription to this thing, and it's not that big of a deal. But then at the same time, they put up, I did the math and I didn't write it down, it's something like $270 worth of content that same day. So really, they gave you just as much monetarily as Microsoft did a couple years ago, and nobody pitched a tantrum about it this time.
That's because people can't do math, and possibly because they decided that was the sweet spot mark and that they couldn't hit it, or that they could hit it.
I don't know. It was weird to me. I don't know.
So speaking of weird, can I share my conspiracy theory with the audience now?
Yes.
Okay. So if you guys, and talking to the audience here, were streaming the pressers, you probably didn't hear before the shows started that they were playing music. Now, one of the more interesting choices was Gautier, someone I used to know, which, if you've somehow escaped hearing it, is a song that reflects on a failed relationship. Now, in the marketing world, relationships are kind of the holy grail. If you can make people connect with a brand on a level that people use language that sounds like they're describing a romantic pairing, then you've reached nirvana. And by that, I'm talking about the people who love their Mac or can't live without their iPhone or have a Nike swoosh tattooed on their body, and they just want to share their feelings with anyone and you know, anyone around them. So back to the Gautier song. Someone I used to know is a tale about a relationship that's kind of crumbled. It's fallen apart because entities no longer share the same sentiments. And ironically, each of the big three played that song, and also describes not just my feelings, but I think many people who followed the events this year's E3. Some of the cynical gaming journalists, where once, you know, the gaming media kind of sat enraptured and hung on every word. Now I saw a lot of them were just on Twitter making snarky comments about Smart Glass or Wonder Book, and I'm guilty of that myself. And it just felt like, yeah, in the past, there was last 2 years, 3D television, they were pushing that, motion peripherals. And they were pushing products with Smart Glass or Wonder Book that we didn't want to really ask for. And instead, I think that these are indicators of this kind of increased distance between the big three and core gamers, and evidence, you know, of this distance in our so-called relationship or lack of relationship. So I think the honeymoons that began with the Xbox 360 and PS3 and maybe even the 3DS and Vita are over. And much like Gautier's song, now we're reminiscing. We're longing for that time again, but we know it just won't happen. And you know, it was probably accidental, like Sean said. You know, they're probably just PR, you know, people picking out top 40 music. But I just thought it was a strange choice, and it really reflected on how I felt about this, you know, this year's show. So wanted to get that off my chest. So you guys can call me crazy.
When, At E3, when you told that story, I retorted with the same story about Starship, and you got your feelings really got hurt. So I'm doing that here.
We built this city? What Starship?
On rock and roll?
No, Starships by Nicki Minaj was the other song you heard a lot of.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
I try to block Nicki Minaj out of my mind.
Yeah,
I remember her outfit at the Victoria's Secret fashion show last year, and it looked like
you
a
would
toddler's
watch
wardrobe threw up on her.
So anyway, back on the big three. I didn't feel like there were any surprises at this year's pressers, and I think that that was one of the elements that was lacking. I'm not sure if you guys remember when Final Fantasy 13 rounded out Microsoft's presser about four years ago or so, but there was this energy in the audience. Like, everybody was so surprised because, you know, here was a game that's traditionally on Sony systems breaking over and coming out on Microsoft systems. And that energy, I think, was stifled by CEOs who looked really uncomfortable up there. Sage called Reggie, who said that he sounded and looked like a football coach. And I think she was pretty much on the spot there. And you know, they were each and every show, maybe Nintendo not so much, but they were marked by really loud bass and seemed like they were using this bass to kind of cover up, you know, to excite people. And for me, at least, it had the opposite effect. So Microsoft Smart Glass seems, again, like something I really don't need, much like the Kinect, you know, pushing something that I don't need. They talk about immersion, but then they show how a person can interrupt the narrative of either what was it, Halo 4, Game of Thrones, for some bit of, you know, tangent information. And to me, I was thinking about how annoying it would be if a person, you know, took out their phone and designed to play in the middle of a Madden game. I mean, besides getting a delay of game call, it'd probably ruin the flow of the game. You know, if you've played the game with anyone that, you know, takes a long time to pick their play. And
odds are that would be it would be a giant penis play.
Right, there you go. and then, you know, using your smartphone to connect to your 360, to connect to the internet, is anyone asking to do this? Was this
If you go back and listen to our podcast after E3, we had the discussion about how that's a good idea.
We did?
Yes, because we talked about the Wii U. We talked about the Wii U and said that is a dumb new feature because any current console could do that if they just connect to your smartphone via Bluetooth.
Hey.
Okay. Well,
Microsoft stole our idea. Let's sue them.
Right. I don't want it. So anyway, my favorite part of the show related to that was when the South Park guys came out and they made fun of this kind of waste of resources. And Kinect has basically been reduced to a voice command module in Splinter Cell, in Madden, and FIFA. And I don't know, all that's cool and everything, but the tech already existed long before, you know, Kinect did through our headsets. But back to smart glasses.
Through a headset.
Yeah, but back to smart glass, to me, that just seems like another revenue stream. You know, if you want a map or a FAQ, you know, well, you know, for newbies, there it is right there for a price. But for anyone that has any sense at all, they'll use their tablet to look it up on GameFAQs, you know, immediately. So in essence,
you want to hear a real example of that real quick?
Yes.
So playing through Sonic CD, making sure I found all the machines. I was like, hey, wouldn't it be funny if I used my Vita? So it's like, I'm doing that.
Right.
And I found maps, and the Vita has no PNG support, so I couldn't do that. So I ended up using my phone.
Oh, well, there's your smart glass. and by the way, so in essence, they were showing a lot of products that really without a need. And then the last thing to round out my E3, as I was leaving, I saw this guy going back for swag bags. He had full-on bags. I didn't, you know, I think they were the G4. Bags. He had one that looked like a Nexon bag from last year, one of those super huge swag bags, and he was going back grabbing another one. And the only reason I spoke to him was because he had the Van Helsing hat, the leather hat. And I said, you visited the Van Helsing book, you know, I was on the escalator talking to him, and he was like, yeah, and he was directing his buddy to grab two more bags full of swag. And I was kind of curious. I said, you know, where's this guy from? You know, what outlet is he from? Turned out he was showing me his badge. He's from IGN. And he was a page from IGN. That's how he described his position. He paid for the trip himself, and he was just collecting as much swag as he could. And it was just kind of disappointing because
no.
There was a lot of people this year that were not interested in, you know, in interviewing and, you know, professional type of stuff, but they were solely for the purpose of the t-shirts and the shit that they were giving out.
Which is so stupid because it's really not, I mean, and our listeners are probably not going to like this, but honestly, it's really not that big a deal. There are some people who give out some cool stuff. If you guys are interested, I'll talk about two cool things I got that you guys missed out on, but like, mostly, it's really not a big deal, and I had one friend when I got back who was complaining about how he doesn't like that they've tried to make it more industry-oriented and that, like, it's harder now for normal people to go. I had to try to explain to him, like, one, you can still go, but two, it's really, really obnoxious and unprofessional when you have these people running around that, and it's not just that they like are super nerdy about the games, but they don't work for anybody. It's that they don't even care about the games. They just want to run around and grab shit.
Yep.
And that's all they care about.
And those Oswald hats are going for $150 on eBay right now.
And
anybody get me a Persona t-shirt?
Some guy, yeah, I have one blue. Hope it can fit you. Some guy was selling, I got an email from some guy selling the PSN one-year subscriptions, PS Plus year subscriptions for $30.
Seriously?
Yeah, seriously. So somebody must have grabbed a stack of those. No, that's but the like other thing I was saying, if you're already part of the industry, you're already getting the shirts and the shit already. I don't even want it anymore because I have an office that's just full of it. And that's why, you know, it's just giving the stuff away. Like, I don't need anymore. I'm already, you know, up to the walls with t-shirts and junk already.
Wait, did we mention already the girl at Tommy Pastrami's?
No, mention her. She was awesome. I gave her a t-shirt for what game?
Spec Ops?
Maybe.
It was Spec Ops, yeah.
Spec Ops, yeah.
There was this girl at Tommy Pastrami's where last year I complained about us going because we had to walk really, really fast and I felt like I was going to be sick. But this year it was great. And we went and this girl was like super excited. She was like, oh, you're part of the convention. That's so cool. I, you know, wanted to try and go check parts of it out, but I'm working. And she just thought it was the coolest thing that we like did video game stuff and actually did interviews and things like that. And Robert gave her this t-shirt because like he said, I mean, we don't really care. So he handed her a t-shirt and she looked like she was going to cry because she was so happy. She was just like, oh my God, you made my whole day. Thank you. It was a really nice moment.
Mm. And I gave a homeless guy I think it was a Star Trek shirt.
You gave a homeless guy your swag?
Well, I mean.
You know he sold it for drugs, right?
That's funny because I considered buying a t-shirt out of a homeless guy the other day because he had this really cool Disney Gargoyles shirt.
Mean the TV show?
Yeah, and it was just a really cool shirt, and it was all beat to hell because homeless dude was wearing it. It was like, I don't know how I start this conversation.
How much to buy the shirt off your back, sir?
Yeah.
You
need
better come correct with at least and not start with less than like $50 though. Like, make his day, and I'd already come prepared with a shirt already for him if you really want it.
Yeah.
But that already sounds kind of douchey. Poor guy.
But do you guys want to hear about Core Blaze, which you missed out on?
Yes, tell me about Core Blaze.
Core Blaze was awesome. It's one of the best parties it is the best E3 party I've ever been to because it was set up like you thought it was going to be really pretentious, and then it really wasn't. They picked you up in a car, which was just nice of them, as it turned out, because it was at Loft 7, which is like right on the edge of sort of bad part of downtown LA.
What kind of car?
A Mercedes truck, like a Mercedes SUV. I didn't know that they made those, but apparently they do. Okay. And it had like it was funny because it had the logos of the game plastered all over the windows, so we actually couldn't see how we got there, Anna and I. Which ended up being funny later because we walked the wrong way down 7th Street for a while into the hobo land. Because we didn't know which way we'd come from, and Anna was so good about leading Deagle. Sean and I are like terrible when we're at E3. We just don't pay attention to where we need to go because we're talking about like things we've seen. So I made Anna party leader and was like, just make us go wherever we need to go. And she was wonderful at it. So
yeah, she was great.
She was fantastic. So when we were down there, they had very good wine, and so we were both a tiny bit intoxicated, so maybe that's, you know, why this happened. But she was like, it's this way, for sure it's this way. So we're walking down 7th Street, and we're getting, like, into, you know, land of fewer and fewer streetlights and more homeless people. And these guys who were coming to pick us up, who are other, you know, reporter friends that I'd made over the week, were freaked out when they finally picked us out. Like, I finally had pulled out my phone and was like, we're going the wrong way. And they found us and picked us up, and they were freaking out because they were like, oh, God, you're in the worst part of town. But it was chill. I talked to a bunch of homeless people. They were really nice to me. I was really nice to them. It was fine.
Have gargoyle
shirts. Sage is also Spawn.
Okay, I'm apparently Spawn. But anyway, no, it was chill. It was a good time. But no, Core Blaze was amazing. So 8-Bit Gaming put on, like, they did all the decor and everything inside this huge penthouse suite.
I am 8-Bit.
I am 8-Bit, yep. I am 8-Bit Gaming. Yep. Whatever they are. And it's run by this, I think her name is Stephanie, this chick who's super seriously cool. Like, if you ever need an event that needs something of that nature, you should totally look into them because they're phenomenal. But you walk in and the party gift, whatever, that's on the table when you walk in to check in is this box of metal cast replica weapons that are the four weapons of the four main character types that you can play in the game. And they're like really nice quality, and they come in this fancy box that says Core Blaze on it. Mm-hmm. And then because we were one of the last groups to go to test the game, and I don't want to talk about the game too much because I'm going to do a write-up about it, but because we were one of the last groups to go, they were also doing a fancy dinner that night up on, like, the roof on the patio at these tables. And so they had bottled bottles of wine with the label Core Blaze on it. That's actually really good wine because they served it during the party, and then at everybody's place setting at the dinner table was, like, a bottle of wine. But it was really nice. It never felt douchey. They had good music. They had really gorgeous artwork up on the walls, which Anna took a bunch of pictures of, and I hope she ends up posting them. It was just a really nice, like, we value that you've come here to look at our game and we're going to show you a good time kind of party. It was really nice.
Pushing Sage.
300 people in Rhode Island can't find jobs because their studio went out of business.
That's
just saying. Just saying.
That's shitty.
Party.
But
Sage.
Yeah.
Did you pull a hip hop gamer and take all the swag bags?
No, I did not.
Did you guys hear about that?
No.
I guess at Pactor's party, he helped himself to a couple of swag bags. I was following the drama this week on Twitter. With the
music. Did he leave only one swag bag?
He doesn't even exist as a real person. He just exists.
Well, it was sponsored by Intel, so obviously they were giving out either netbooks or laptops. So.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Actor. Again, excess, and then we wonder why studios close.
You know what? You know who's getting really accessible, not in a good way, accessible, not successful, is Ubisoft, because they think they're getting so successful that they've become, like...
Suck.
So they
tell me about your experience at the party, Sage. Now you played Sam Fisher.
Snuck into it. So I met this guy named Byron while I was at E3 this year, and he's this really, really cool guy, and we hung out at most of the parties because he also got invites to a lot of places, and he's pretty cool, and we both managed to talk our way into places even if we don't have invites because we're pretty nice people. So we get to the Ubisoft party, to which we were invited by Mary What's-Her-Face, who's the person that puts on all of E3. She puts on the whole shebang. And she was like, well, we're going to be there later, so why don't you meet us there? So we went, and Ubisoft, in their excessively snooty, like, they're getting worse and worse every year, very French way, were like, well, you're not on our list, so you can't come in. And
that sounded vaguely German.
Whatever, it's all the same. And they
racist.
Just kidding. They didn't want to let us in, so we're like, fuck this. And, you know, he wanted to wait and because he was pissed because we had to drive all the way to Hollywood to go to this party. But I was like, I don't care. It's probably a crap party. Let's go. And he's like, no, that's terrible. So we walked into the around the back of the building, and we snuck in because the door was open. And, you know, there was another Ubisoft guy out there who kind of was like, whoa, whatever, and turned his back, and we walked in. And it other than having very good food, there was nothing special about that party. Like, nobody was dancing. The music was terrible. There was an open bar, but who cares? They all have open bars. And we were there for about 10 minutes.
Right.
And the place was luxe, and their security is, like, clearly on top of their game because they showed up within 10 minutes. And they're like, you didn't come in through the front, did you? And I just say nothing. I'm sitting
there
eating.
Wait, it took them 10 minutes? I'd say that's kind of lax.
Well, it's in the dark. I mean, I think it took them a minute to realize who we were and then where we were, but they came and got us. They were more mad at Byron than me. I don't know if it's because he's this, like, huge, tall, black guy, and I don't know if they decided that therefore it was his fault that we snuck in.
I think it's because you were at E3 and you had boobs. It's hard to get mad at you.
But my boobs weren't out on full display, so I don't know that that had much to do with it or not. But they
definitely don't tell that about the guy who almost ran into three people looking at you.
What guy was that?
Was it after he saw Star Trek?
Yeah.
There was a guy that almost ran into three people?
Yeah, we told you about it.
Yes.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, but I didn't notice that.
I did. Never mind. I was about to say something to him, but E3 wasn't the place to start a fight.
You should have. I would have been really amused. You want to look at my tits? I'll give you something else to look at. My fists. Boosh, boosh.
Okay.
Anyway, so I got kicked out of an Ubisoft party, but that's okay because they're pretentious and fuck them.
Okay.
That's nice.
And the Ubisoft press conference was really, really boring other than Assassin's Creed and the art book that we got.
Can I play devil's advocate now for the pressers like I was going to do 20
do.
Minutes sure. ago?
Please do.
So here's the thing about E3 this year is that this is the first year that they televised everything, right? Yeah. Like they televised last year, I think they televised Nintendo's conference and
Microsoft's.
No? Yeah. But this year everything was EA, Microsoft, Sony, Nintendo, who else had a presser? Ubi. They were all televised. And they were televised in multiple places. They weren't just on the web. They weren't just on G4. They were on Spike. I think Ubi's was on Spike, G4, and something else. So they were out there. You know, the public was watching. They made good numbers. And so a lot of people were afraid to show anything. You know, one of the big complaints was, you know, they didn't show anything Vita, and they only showed a splash screen for Call of Duty. And it was basically that, you know, it's PR's job to control what gets out to the public. And if millions of people are seeing this and you don't want to get drowned out by whatever else is in this conference that you don't know about, it's best to hold it back and wait till after E3 to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And that's what a lot of people did. You know, like Call of Duty didn't want to be out there and compete with, I don't know, Metal Gear, whatever they thought might have been shown there. And what we ended up with was Wonder Book.
I totally agree, it's also a competition, Sean.
It is a competition, but it's one of those things that what could Sony put in there that is okay for millions of people to see and that would excite the people who aren't just enthusiast press?
Because
the enthusiast press, the enthusiast press is there and was going to leave that and go to the show floor and see games.
But
MSNBC is going to want to talk about Harry Potter.
Right, but here's the thing with that. I mean, I completely agree with what you're saying, and I totally get that point. My problem with the pressers was not what they did not show. It was how they showed what they showed. Like I said, I don't know about Microsoft because I wasn't there, but I felt like overall they were, like, pretty lackluster. The way that they – and, like, Nintendo, the way that they handled
– I lost you.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
Censored. I'm curious because Ubi just opened with a pair of tits, so I'm wondering if that got televised.
That's true. I wonder how that worked.
Yeah. Even though they were not real tits, they were...
Although talking to my coworker, it sounds like they got away with that because he wanted to talk about that.
Really?
Huh. Yeah.
Surprised. Okay.
But I don't know exactly which outlet he used to watch it, because I'm sure if you watch it online, you could see that, but maybe not on Spike.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know if he has cable, to be perfectly honest. But I don't know. To touch on what Sage was about to say, I don't think the actual presentation of the things was necessarily bad. I do agree that splitting up Nintendo's was weird. But you also have to remember that people that follow Nintendo. So for them, it's actually pretty great. Because if you are a Nintendo fan who only plays Nintendo consoles, all of a sudden E3 is not just a one-day thing. It's a whole week of stuff you get to follow.
Yeah, but then you have to deal with the whole message of... Oh my God, they didn't announce, what was that 3DS game?
Fire Emblem?
Yeah, they didn't, and everyone's like, where the fuck was Fire Emblem? And everyone was mad and hating on Nintendo. And I guess, you know, there was payoff eventually, but do you really want to do that to your audience?
Well, Nintendo didn't.
They just spent so much time with Nintendo Land, and they did not, once again, they did not need to spend that much time. It's like, here, we get it. We understand it. And the more they showed, the more they were doing a disservice to themselves.
I kind of follow that. I think they think it's a bigger deal than it is. I do agree with that.
It's like we get it, and it should be a pack-in. It's like they shouldn't have to explain it. It is the type of software that should explain itself. It's showing the functionality of the Wii U.
But I think we don't really see it as something more than that, you know?
Well, they compared it to Wii Sports, and that was the whole point and function of Wii Sports.
Yeah, and Wii Sports was also a phenomenon, which, so if they're comparing it to Wii Sports, they want to spend as much time with it as they can, because this is going to be the thing that, in their eyes, people are going to be talking about for years to come, like Wii Sports.
Mm. You know? Okay. Yeah.
What did you think of the closing fireworks display?
It was silly, but it was kind of neat. Yeah. I mean, like, that stuff's not exactly going to wow me. You know?
By that time, I was so, like, disinterested in Nintendo Land that the fireworks display, I was just like, okay, let me just get out of here.
Like, I said when we were there, I thought that Nintendo Land should have been a vehicle. It should have been Nintendo's Team Fortress hats, right? Like, you get Nintendo Land as a pack-in, it comes with 7 games or whatever. And then, you know, new Zelda game comes out. Oh, and you know what? You buy this game, it's got a new add-on for Nintendo Land. And then, so as you're building up your collection of games, Nintendo Land is growing.
Yep. I know. I totally agree with that. Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it's expansive like that. And it seems silly to have the theme park model and not take advantage of that.
And use it as a way to promote new properties. Like, this is coming out in 2 months. Here's a taste of it by, you know, using the different IPs and stuff like that. As a promotional, I think, you know, a promotional game.
Yeah.
Sage is trying to get in, by the way. Sage, we can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Okay, now I can hear you.
I don't know what happened. My annoyance destroyed the wireless connection.
I guess it did. It's okay. We talked about it for you.
Okay. You guys got what I was saying, right?
Yeah. You did not appreciate the presentation.
Again,
because we were being presented for TV, not for the audience.
No, but it doesn't matter.
You're presenting for TV, you got to bring it up a notch.
Yeah, and these guys were boring.
Yeah, these guys, you know, Nintendo, Reggie wasn't on game.
Totally boring.
The guy for the 3DS, where did they pick him from?
Okay, but imagine this, if you will. You're watching that same press conference on TV, and while they're talking and being boring, it probably cuts away to screenshots and all sorts of other stuff. So, yeah, they're still droning on, but you're seeing cool stuff.
Okay, maybe.
You know, like, we didn't see that. We saw two dudes on stage being boring.
Right. Okay. You still hear them being unenthusiastic. And Ubisoft with that one, I forgot his name, Toby... What was his name?
That guy was Tobuscus or whatever. That guy was fucking obnoxious.
Yeah. You know, I saw him today on TV in a
Hot Pocket. Did you doing what? Fapping?
Hot Pocket. No, Hot Pocket commercial.
He was fapping a Hot Pocket? What?
No, he's in a Hot Pocket, and he doesn't use whatever name he used either. He was, I don't know, maybe I'll find it and put it in the show notes. But I was watching YouTube, and the commercial I had to wait through was a Hot Pocket commercial with that guy. And I'm like, I don't think you're a YouTube sensation. I'm pretty sure you're a YouTube commercial.
That kid is a Faptastic star jackass is what that kid is.
Yeah.
Fapping to Hot Pockets?
That's so gross.
But anything, I guess we're kind of running a little long in the tooth there. But I think the moral of the story for me was that after listening to a bunch of post E3 stuff from other people, it sounds like there was a lot on the show floor that just kind of got missed out on. Mm-hmm. Like we said, there wasn't anything Vita in the pressers. And if you went on the show floor, we didn't really see any Vita or 3DS anything, but apparently it was all there. I just don't know where it was.
Here's your multinational corporation. You're asking people to care about your product, but you don't show it. It's only on the floor. That really sends a good message.
But also, some of them made it difficult to find. Like, Ubisoft's Grand Central Station thing was, like, constructed in a way where unless you knew exactly where in these, like, twisty things.
Right.
I mean, it was really good for crowd control, but unless you knew where the game you wanted to play was, you couldn't find it. Like, I could not find Zombie at all.
It was bad for crowd control. There was, like, little areas where it would get congested. It was awful.
Right. Well, okay, so it was shitty all around.
Yeah, it was. And you couldn't even see from one thing to another. Like, you know, you couldn't see in one alcove, maybe there was Far Cry or what was over there. And there was no way of really, you know, seeing what was in the different parts, the different corners of their booth. Shit.
Yeah, but like,
here's some good stuff that did happen. Everybody sang karaoke. I didn't, actually, but Anna Deagle and Sean sung karaoke.
Yes.
Sang karaoke.
Please tell me it's on YouTube.
It's not on YouTube. It was a very nice moment for the four of us. but it was great. Sean sang the best, but Anna score, and I'm not sure how that worked out.
I thought Anna sang the best.
Well, it's
one Sean had like the most like hit notes or whatever, okay. But had a lower like you and he both got D's. Anna got like a C something, but she had fewer hit notes than Sean did. So I'm not sure how that works out.
Who knows?
It was a pretty crappy karaoke game compared to SingStar. Anyway,
it was pretty crappy. And then Sean was trying to beat some Silent Hill boss, and Deagle tried to fuck him up and distract him, which was not friendly of Deagle, but it was hilarious.
But yeah, that was E3. It was a show, E3. And people were disappointed. It's funny. Like I said, it's funny listening to things after the fact, because so much of the stuff was non-disclosure this year, mm-hmm. And so it'll be like, yeah, they didn't show Call of Duty at the show, but I talked to somebody who knew somebody who said that they got to do a hands-on demo in the back. And it's like, okay, go on. But meh. Oh, and Tomb Raider was crap. I'm not excited about that anymore.
Hey, that's not fair. Tomb Raider was not crap. Tomb Raider was a little unrealistic in the time progression of how your character changes. Considering it's a video game, that's understandable. And actually, it looks like a better Tomb Raider than some of the more recent ones that have come out.
It does look like a better Tomb Raider than the recent ones, but it's. I still think they're missing what they're trying for. And I think, you know, ever since, I don't know if you've been following the debacle of their press release, where they're talking about basically they don't understand how to make a powerful woman character, and they don't think women play their games. After reading that and thinking back to my complaints about it, it's very telling. Like my big complaint was the last thing in the behind closed door demo. I didn't sign anything, so I'm just gonna say this: you shoot a dude, and then you're really upset about it because, oh my god, I just shot a dude, and she's crying and she's freaking out, and then just stops, gets up, and then does her like sassy gun pose, and then holsters. And
but here's a normal video game thing to have an accelerated time span. Like that's most.
No, that's not an accelerated time span. That is a misunderstanding of emotion.
Yeah,
and
the other thing that I thought was funny, and this is a smaller thing, but it's still kind of silly, is that so going into that scene, she's been using her bow and arrow. She's gotten her hands tied up. She opens it, gets her hands uncut, steals the gun from the guy, shoots him. And then somewhere in that scene change, she has a holster. Like during that confrontation, it just grows out of her leg.
That's true. That was a mistake.
It's like in the Hitman trailer, how he got behind the nuns, which almost made me cry, much like Lara Croft, because it crashed on me 3 times.
That was really shitty.
Yeah.
It crashed 3 times.
Yeah. Changing costumes. That's a feature that doesn't quite work.
Speaking of costumes, I was really annoyed that, and speaking of like women and women don't play games, so pretty much everywhere we went that had t-shirts had the following sizes: medium, large, 1XL, 2XL, 3XL. They had no smalls. They had no extra smalls. I'm a little person. I would actually like to come home and wear with pride a shirt that I got from E3 if it's from a game that I like, but I can't unless I want to sew it into a goddamn dress, because every size they have is like gigundo size.
I know, and the 3X looked like a flag. Was huge.
Right, like who would wear? But I mean, that's fine. I understand there are a lot of
larger person gamers out there,
which is fine. But like, they should have like 5 small shirts. I probably will turn it into a dress and wear it, but that's not the point. I shouldn't have to alter the t-shirt just to fucking wear it, man.
All right, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I can't turn that into a Let's Start Trivia. I'm not doing this.
Let's Start Trivia. Is that what you want?
Trivia time. A little time for.
First,
let's do a little bit more upbeat. Question number one. This week sees the release of Grasshopper Manufacturers Lollipop Chainsaw, featuring a script written by schlock master James Gunn. Which of the following properties has the writer / actor / director not had a hand in? Is it A, Scooby-Doo? B, Scooby-Doo 2, Monsters Unleashed? C, PG Porn? D, Cabin Fever? Or E, Slither?
Wait, are you saying which of those was he not involved in?
Yes. I emphasize not.
I'm going to say Cabin Fever.
Scooby-Doo.
Okay, Blue, I didn't hear you.
I'm going to go with Cabin Fever as well.
Correct answer, Cabin Fever. Good job, you.
Yes!
My girlfriend's dad worked on the special effects for Scooby-Doo 1 and 2.
Okay.
I so got you to... had a one up on us then.
Yes. I didn't know anything more about it other than those two facts. I have seen the first one.
If I laugh at the next question, I've already failed. Okay, so deep breath. Beyond being the lead singer for Mindless Self-Indulgence, this performer also crafted music for Lollipop Chainsaw's boss segments, earning a cameo in the game. Name him. A. Jimmy Urine. B. Freddy Feces. C. Dick Stroker. D. Joe Mucus. Or E. Victor Von Schwinkter.
That was
a little tough.
Okay. I think I know who it is because he is a DLC character, skin, whatever, and I believe it's Jimmy Urine.
I'm not going to argue with Blue on Lollipop Chainsaw Trivia because it was made specifically for him. Yeah. Also, it's at a 68 on Metacritic right now. We're so close. Somebody write a bad review.
Shut up!
Sean has a bet going.
Actually, we have to average the Xbox 360 and PS3 scores just to be safe.
So not fair.
I was so turned off from Lollipop Chainsaw because of their gratuitous use of boobs at E3 that I know nothing about it.
God, that girl was everywhere. You'd look. There she was.
Right? She was everywhere with her tits. Yeah. And her tits were like bigger than my head and falling out everywhere. It was really gratuitous. Yeah. It was awesome.
This definitely sounds like my kind of game.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't care. I defer to Blue's judgment. Whatever the answer is, I don't care.
Correct answer, Dick Stroker. No,
oh god, that's what I was gonna pick. Shit.
I was gonna pick that too. No. It sounds like a musician name.
I'm kidding. It's Jimmy Urine. Blue had it.
Yes.
I don't know how I made that without laughing. Okay.
Blue, you
Robert, that took all my energy. I'm spent now. Somebody carry on. Number three. While Gungnir is Department Heaven's latest PSP offering, it's also the name of Odin's spear. But you might have heard the name in another game when referring to a certain clothing or armor. Name this title. Is it A. Viking Battle of Asgard? B. Halo Reach? C. Guitar Hero 5? D. Ragnarok Online? Or E. Too Human?
I'm going to say Halo.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Oh, boy.
Which of the following games has this Viking thingy as a title, as a type of armor?
And what was the name of it?
No, we already know the name. Gungnir.
What's the name?
Gungnir. Thank you.
I don't know.
They're all Nordic, except for Halo.
The Viking one.
The Viking.
I'm going to go with, I think I'll go with Halo 2.
Correct answer. You guys are on a roll. Blue's on a roll. Halo Reach.
Yes.
Wow. You guys are hot. Number four.
Gungnir.
End of Nations developer Petroglyph has a solid pedigree with its core developers having gleaned experience crafting foundational PC strategy titles. Name the game with no direct development ties to current studio heads. A. Command & Conquer. B. Dune 2. C. Age of Empires. D. Nox. Or E, Populous, The Beginning.
Populous.
Populous, yeah.
Blue?
I guess my better judgment, I'm going to go with Command & Conquer, just because it's Command & Conquer.
Blue, oh, you broke it. I think Sean's on the roll now. Correct answer, Populous, The Beginning.
Ooh! You finally got one right.
Cabbage Patch. Cabbage Patch.
Okay, number five. Hey, Wii owners, it's time to play Pikmin 2, now with Wiimote support patched in. Wait, what's that, Japanese, European, and Australians? You don't really care? You played this game years ago? Really? Just how long ago was it released in your territory? A, 2007, B, 2008, C, 2009, D, 2010, or E, 2011?
Wait, Pikmin 2?
Yes, with remote support.
I'm going to say 2009.
I'm going to say 2010.
Blue, you hummed that pretty hard.
2008, right?
Yeah, okay, 2008 and 9. Correct answer, 2009.
Yes! Tie game, baby, tie game.
Woo!
Fucking Blue, you know everything this week.
No, that fucking Blue.
Fucking Blue!
Who read my mind this week? Well, I guess there were two questions on Lollipop Chainsaw, and he's our resident expert on that.
That's true.
So,
by the way, the Metacritic thing, it's not fair that the PS3 one is just missing two reviews. It's not an average. It's just them.
Whoever's handling PR for it, they didn't send out the too many copies of the PS3 version.
Well, no, it's just that four of the six websites that have reviews up now put for Xbox and PS3, and two of them just put for Xbox.
Mm. Well, did you see? It actually would be rather higher. There's one outlier. Somebody posted.
Like, I don't care. Somebody gave it a 20.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about. The lowest score was 40, and then somebody gave it let me look it up. Oh, quarter three gave it a 2. 2 out of 10. Well, thank God Destructoid gave it a 9.
Damn it.
you keep doing your thing, Destructoid. Earn me my lunch.
All right, speaking of lunch, are we on to mailbag?
Yes, we are. I don't know how those two are correlated.
Bag lunch, mailbag, bag lunch. Come on, see what you hear.
Okay, you're sticking with the sacks. We got Nomad Man, who's asking, after streaming and watching the E3 conferences, I had one thought. Is innovation dead? Please answer. And he says, by this, I'm referring to sequels that look just like previous release games, Black Ops 2, Halo 4, God of War, Ascension, and Assassin's Creed 3.
Now, the funny thing that I thought about this mailbag question is that last year was like sequelitis out the wazoo. And this year, while there are a hearty helping of sequels to be found, I felt like there were definitely more original titles. Like Ubisoft was really proud of Watch Dogs, yeah. And Beyond Two Souls is coming out, and while those games may have things that we find problematic, right, well, no. But while we may find some of that stuff problematic, I did find that there was a lot more of that kind of like new in it, like this is actually new IP and isn't, whether or not it's going to be done well, it's actually new IP coming out.
And I like to say for the record, you guys saw it, Black Ops 2. Now I know a lot of people are kind of more of the same, but they are actually adding in a standalone kind of sandbox mode, which scales from RTS all the way on to ground level, and that can change and affect the gameplay.
It's not standalone. It's just not standalone, certain levels in the game.
It's a new take on how to do it, which is still new.
Yeah, it's not the kind of linear pathway kind of shooter that people are used to, but it's a new mode that's integrated within the storyline, and I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
The trailer or gameplay demonstration for Call of Duty, I'm sorry, it was just too ridiculous for me. It's like shit is just happening everywhere. And it was the same way with Resident Evil 6.
Yeah,
it's like it was just absurd. It wasn't entertaining because of explosions. It was just stupid.
Right. On a 10 volume. It's like there are no highs and lows. There's no, points to savor. There's no really, pivotal moments. And I think that's the problem with games, is that they try to continually deliver this adrenaline rush. And there's no, momentum. There's no none of that, kind of high-low that's almost story arc to them.
We talked about it, though, right after we saw it. And it takes place in 10 years from now and in Los Angeles. And I was like, there's way too much new building in this. Yeah. Nothing can get built in 10 years in Los Angeles.
Unless the economy picks up 5 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
It's an alternate universe. That's allowed.
That's true.
Next question?
That was the only question. I wanted to say...
There are more.
I don't know. You get called out. I did want to add, it's the end of the generation, so they're getting all those last of this generation sequels out so they can do new stuff for the next one.
Ganchef says, how are Sony and Nintendo doing at supporting their portables? What can be done differently? What grade would you give each company's effort so far?
F. Fucking F. Well, F. Fucking F. I mean, the Vita is failing. Who is that we were talking to that told us that in, Norway, like their store that they work at sold 6 Vitas in the last, like, 2 months?
Yeah.
Sounds like my Walmart.
I don't think
you can fail it based on the hardware alone. I think the Vita hardware has potential.
They're not, Yeah, it does have potential, but they haven't released enough games that actually like utilize the crossover to PS3 effect. They haven't made the books of it at all.
Tiger.com, something that's just, you know, complete shit hardware. And so
it bugs me so much when people call it the game.com.
Okay.
I definitely think 3DS is doing a better job, as lame as it might be that, like, I think they have less original IP kind of stuff, but, like, I think that they're doing a better job at least trying to push their games and advertise themselves than the Vita is.
Well, Vita hasn't even been through a holiday season yet, so we'll see whether or not it's worth supporting after we see whether or not people buy it for Christmas.
Sean, you're the Vita's just around the corner. It's coming. It's coming. Winter is coming, man, for Vita.
We'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just one of those things that is something that needs to happen. It's one of those things that they released it way too early. I said it when it came out because, you know, we live in a time where people are going to judge it. You know, we can judge it, right? Mm-hmm. If this had happened before Twitter, you know, it would have come out. Sales numbers wouldn't have been great, but we wouldn't have been hounding it so much for those sales numbers being great. And then Christmas would have come around. They would have done a big advertising push and it would have been just like they had just released it, right?
Right.
Now it's one of those things that there are all these gloom and doom articles about how poorly it's selling, which is also going to adversely affect it, and it hasn't even made it to Christmas yet.
Right.
So we should have just waited for Christmas to think about how it's doing anyway, but since this is the way media works now, they're kind of going through their, whatever you call those tunnels that you walk through and people whip you. The gauntlet, sure. I'll call it the gauntlet. They're walking through the Twitter gauntlet.
Downtown 7th Street, but you got to pay for that. What was I going to say?
Hey, I got a lot of love.
I mean, effectively, you got a $50 price cut, too, with everybody giving gift cards.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I know. We'll see, like I said, we'll see what happens. As far as Sony supporting it, they're doing a terrible job. They're doing an absolutely terrible job.
All right. So, yeah, they are. I don't know where they're spending their $50
million. Nintendo hasn't done that bad of a job with the 3DS in the last several months. You know, it's got Mario Kart 7 and it's got Mario 3D Land. I mean, they're doing a okay job.
Yeah, but none of that is particularly original, and all of it is just sort of more of the sameness. Like, I know that I'm certainly not inspired to buy a 3DS just to play another, you know, output of the same stuff that I have on my other Nintendo systems.
Well, yeah, it's the same with me, but you know, I'll give them credit where credit's due. At least they got the big A franchises on there.
Totally. Like I said, I'm more inclined to buy a 3DS than I am a Vita. Like, I think Vita gets a big old fucking F, and 3DS gets like a D plus.
Well, the big news for Vita right now is there's a a survey going around that implies pretty heavily that they're going to start for PlayStation Plus members. If you download a digital copy of like a Vita game, you will get the PS3 version for free and vice versa.
That's cool.
The
thing I would encourage Sony to do is encourage smaller, like, digital developers. Like, what was the Tales of the Mutant Blob? It was a great game, reasonably priced, and I think if they could pump out a lot of those and get some developers on board, they can make money. Sony can, you know, make
money.
Well,
That was one of the only games they talked about at the presser, was Guacamelee, which is the Mutant Blob Attacks guy, Street Fox.
Right. I just wanted to see 10 of those. So
yeah.
Sweet Ninja Jesus.
Whose name I love, by the way. That's a great name.
Sean and Sage, you're getting called out. You seem like DLC defenders, so let me present you with this. He links to a giant bomb article talking about Saboteur, a game I like, going offline. So he says, basically, single-player content from Saboteur was removed by EA. I bought the game at launch and got the DLC code. Now, last week, my 360 died, and when I replaced it, I found I could re-download The Midnight Show. Well, what's the problem there? Basically, DLC allows the publisher to revoke elements at any time. You no longer own what you bought. By the way, go get them, Blue.
Saboteur, I don't know how the 360 works, but on the PS3, there are a couple things that are like that, where the publisher had to take down things.
Right.
But as long as it has been on the store and you have downloaded it in the past on PlayStation Network, you'll always have access to that. I know I've had several instances where something gets taken down, and I can still go into my download list, and I can still download those things.
I don't think that's always the case.
It is for PS3. I don't know.
What about some of that Midway stuff? I know there's been some stuff that's completely gone missing.
Yeah, that stuff's all still there, but you had to have downloaded it before the publisher took it down.
Are you sure?
All of Sega's PSP games have gone missing, and you can still download them. Mm. And same thing. Well, the Midway thing's different on 362 because Sony actually bought the rights to some of it. Like Mortal Kombat 2, you can actually still buy on the PlayStation Network, and you can't on 360. Mm. But that stuff's still all there. It's just you have to have already downloaded it before it went away.
Okay.
Sorry, Sean.
A lot of that stuff is in a weird place right now, just because it's the same thing with old games, right? Mm-hmm. That when people started putting out DLC, they didn't understand how to future-proof that. And so mm-hmm. situations like Saboteur, that developer and publisher went out of business not too long after that game was released, and now a couple years later, that contract's run out, and so now it's just, what do you do with that? Because if they keep selling it, who's making that money? And, you know, it just gets too complicated. So there has to be a way, without screwing the publishers, to say, hey, this will be available forever.
I think that Sweet Ninja Jesus, while I love your name, you're a little confused because I am not a huge DLC supporter or torchbearer at all. What I've mostly said about DLC is that generally it's overpriced, it's unreasonable, and it's unnecessary. I do think it has a place and can be really cool when it actually adds additional content. And I think that when things are revoked after you've purchased them, you should get your money back. I think that the video game industry is encountering this in a very real way, especially with Diablo 3, because a lot of people wanted their money back from Blizzard because Diablo 3 servers were down so much. And at first Blizzard had said, we're not going to do that because in theory you could copy the game and then, you know, you return it and we give you your money back and then you have a copy of the game. But they, I forget which court ruled, somebody ruled that actually that was not okay under consumer law and that Blizzard had to give money back to customers who were dissatisfied. So well, I think that in general, if DLC is going to get released and then is not available later on, then they either owe you your money back or owe you some other kind of compensation.
I don't think that's necessary. I mean, I've always been you're paying for a service, not the code. Mm-hmm. And one of the, if like DLC, like the Saboteur thing, right? Like, let's say I bought the Saboteur at launch, I played through the Midnight DLC or I bought a used copy and I paid for it. Right. And then I played it and I never thought about it again. And then the DLC goes away. A, who's giving me my money back in that situation? Cause the company who sold it went out of business and B, like I already got my enjoyment out of that, you know? Like, why do I deserve?
Well, wouldn't the burden be on the publisher, which is EA, who contains the code on their servers? And this is only because I think it's an EA thing, because EA has their own servers. They've always kind of separated from everyone mm-hmm. else.
Yeah, right. They're always regularly shutting off the servers for their sports games and yep. older shit.
No, I think if you pay for something, I mean, my bottom line is if you pay for something, you're entitled to the value of it. You could make an argument that if you've got to play it for a certain amount of time, you got the value out of it. But I'm an old school gamer, so I think that if you pay for something that has to do with a game, that should be yours. Like, mm-hmm. if I buy a cartridge game, I own the cartridge. I can, as long as my system is running, can play it whenever I want. If I buy DLC content that actually adds to the game, that should be available to me forever. Mm-hmm. And if it's not, you know, relevant to the game and it's sort of superfluous, then they shouldn't be selling it for inordinate amounts of money anyway.
I got fucked by Darkspore today. I bought it for $5 on Steam. Came with a CD key, which I entered, and it would let me pass based on the CD key. So I can't even. I can play the demo.
I want to jump back. This is one last point because I've actually got to go. But he brought up the EA shutting down sports servers and stuff. Mm-hmm. What if you bought a game and it was saying that you are paying for a license to play this game for a year? Because that's kind of what I think sports games amount to. Like,
good. Then they're being straightforward. I would appreciate
that. Would you rather them do what they're doing now and just tell you that they're doing it?
Yes. I think transparency is a good thing in business. Let people know. I think people get bothered and hurt when they realize, oh, this wasn't the case, and there are assumptions.
I think people would get bothered. I mean, that's the thing, is I think that assumption should be there, because I feel like that's the way that Madden games have always been, has been our target audience will buy this game every year. So I don't see why people are shocked when they can't play Madden 2007 anymore.
I do think that there's some fine print whenever you buy the game.
But I I think there'd be a lot of blowback if they just started saying that, you know?
Maybe.
You know, hey, gaming's turning into a you had to be there type of thing now. You know, servers shutting down and stuff like that. It's like, what the reason why I like the older stuff is because, you know, I can go grab a copy of a game that's been out for 20 years and still have the same experience that the people that picked it up on day one had.
Well, the drop-off rate for any core game, though, is ridiculous. Like, core gamers, our audience, they will buy the game that came out this week, and they will play it in general for about a week. And that's a sad fact, that we spend all this time following these things that we love, and in reality, what we're doing is we've been manipulated by these sort of marketing machines so much that by the time the thing that we're so excited comes out, we're already excited for something else.
Right.
So something that we feel like we've been waiting for forever, when it finally gets to us, we realize that there's something else that we've been waiting for forever that's coming out next week, and we just drop it like a bad habit. So I'm not really surprised that so many of these things go missing, because it's like, how many people are playing the Saboteur right now? Like, yeah, we sure are upset about it, but why, you know?
Like, of course, there are some games that are on XBLA that have gotten discontinued due to licensing as well, and can't buy them anymore either. I mean, Outrun Arcade, went down, and I've heard rumors that, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time reshelled. That might have gotten pulled.
That got pulled because Nickelodeon owns the license to that now. But again, I own that game and literally just downloaded that on PSN because I already owned it.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like, now if anybody wants to go back and play it, oh, you're fucked. If you didn't get it already.
But that's the way in which I think that the future of gaming and all of the stuff like cloud, and I mean, because in theory all your stuff's saved on cloud, but it's not actually the same. I don't want to sound like an old fogey, but like, I like the old days of having physical disc/cartridge that you put into a system, because if licensing stuff goes bad, you still own the game. And I understand when licensing stuff changes, but like, if you've already paid for the content and for the IP and you're not making copies of it illegally, you should be allowed to retain that thing that you purchased, regardless of whether or not their licensing runs out.
And I do worry about I don't think Steam's going to go away anytime soon, but what if one of the smaller things like Impulse or something disappears or is bought up?
Because
I'm kind of counting on that. Okay, well, one last question. I get called out here by David. Dez, why do you gush about Rockstar's game so much that it's embarrassing? You say Max Payne 3 is all revolutionary, but all it did was copy movies. That's hardly revolutionary. So, I know. My answer to David was that I really enjoyed the narrative, the original Max Payne and sequel, the second one. I felt really like they were emulating comic books, and I really didn't care about Max Payne or his family. I enjoyed the action elements, and I thought with the third one I was really involved, and I was connected to the character. I cared about Max, not so much the family, but there is some character arc there, and I think that change, that progression, was really important, and it shows the difference in generations in what can be shown. Yes, Rockstar has crib movies, and I mentioned that in my review, but some of the way they integrated action scenes was really phenomenal, and I don't know, I was a huge fan of Max Payne 3 altogether. Yeah.
I like the first one for all the parts that everybody else hates. The baby crying part is one of my favorite parts in all video games.
I'm fucking done talking to you. That is awful.
No, but it's
you got to be fucking kidding me. That was the worst thing ever. Where you're walking along those blood trails.
Yeah.
And
Max is frustrated and you're frustrated, and it makes you feel that, in the Metal Gear Solid microwave tunnel, are the only two moments in history that have been able to do that.
That totally interrupts the game. Feeling.
Yeah, it's so great. That is one of the best moments in games. But if I wanted to read what you thought about Max Payne, where could I do that?
I'm still mad at you.
Just for even bringing that up. Anyway, if you liked what you heard, why not compliment this experience with reading some of our reviews, previews, and gaming info available at techgaming.com. If you'd like our opinions on gaming, pretty much anything else, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm Robert Allen at tech_gaming. Sean Kirkland is available at Sean Nola. Sage Morris Green at Samurage. And Blue is at Blue Swim. Not here tonight, but here in spirit. Jeremy Lawman Lamont is at Jeremy_Lamont. So don't forget to subscribe to the Tech Gaming Podcast on iTunes, and please leave us a review.
And also please like us on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, same name, everything. And we have more pictures from E3 that are going to go up there. And all of our review links are posted to the Facebook page. And you can like us and chat with us and blah, blah, blah.
You can chat with us?
You can. I will chat with people if they go to our Facebook page and leave messages. Sector. I will chat with them.
Green light.
You guys are so mean to Sector. He's not. Like,
he was asking for where the pictures of you were at E3. Specific.
Yeah, but there were no pictures of any of them.
Anyway, let's say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody. We love you so much. Please pay attention to all the garbige that we say.
See you, baby. I love you. Bye-bye.